China is precisely one of the major pains which Russia can inflict to the United States and NATO.
China closely watches Ukraine. It's Monday, January 31st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, living with COVID. Dr. Fauci speaks with us. A Supreme Court lineup change. Tennis history in Australia. Welcoming the Year of the Tiger. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China is watching with interest as Russia and the West face off over Ukraine. Beijing is engaged in its own territorial disputes and has offered political support from Moscow. But as Henry Ridgewell reports, China has also invested billions of dollars in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, which could be at risk in the event of any conflict.
Western nations have threatened unprecedented economic sanctions against Moscow if it invades Ukraine. If cut off by the West, could Russia look east to China for help?
The policy I think China is likely to take is to do whatever they can to help the Russians to face up to the economic sanctions that the US and Europeans may impose on Russia. Economic links between China and Russia are not really strong enough to replace any break off of economic links between Russia and Europe.
China has offered political support for Moscow in its standoff over Ukraine.
This foreign policy coordination will definitely increase because from the Russian perspective, intensification of the military partnership between Russia and China is precisely one of the major pains which Russia can inflict to the United States and NATO.
Meanwhile, China is closely watching NATO and America's response to any Russian invasion.
Even though there's these troop deployments to Eastern European states, no states are talking about directly sending troops into Ukraine itself to defend. And of course, China is taking note of that with some of their own territorial disputes in their own area.
Taiwan is China's biggest territorial dispute. And there is a risk of miscalculation as Beijing watches events unfold in Ukraine, says Steve Tsang.
The Chinese seeing the Americans and the Europeans talking big, but not doing very much about it, which would embolden them, overreach Taiwan, and potentially miscalculate what the American responses to a crisis over Taiwan might be.
Despite their mutual rivalry with the US, China and Russia's interests don't always align. Beijing's multi-trillion dollar Belt and Road Initiative cut through several former Soviet bloc states, including Ukraine. A direct rail and ferry freight link opened in 2016, linking China with Ukraine's Black Sea coast via Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Kazakhstan, bypassing Russia. China has also funded infrastructure projects, including a new metro line for Kiev. If Russia invades Ukraine, could Beijing's investments in the region be at risk?
The more immediate impact on the Belt and Road Initiative would in fact be the Russian military intervention in Kazakhstan. And the Chinese government actually have shown that they are quite relaxed and comfortable with that. To them, it's more important to support authoritarian states and autocrats to stay in power and then for some of them to be closer to Russia than to China at the moment. Over the longer term, things may change.
In the short term, analysts say China is keen to keep a lid on the simmering tensions for at least the next few weeks as it prepares to host the Winter Olympics. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The story is rapidly developing. Follow it with us at VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter and voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. North Korea launches longest-range missile since 2017. Myanmar cybersecurity law days away as coup anniversary nears. Beijing seals off more residential areas, reports 12 cases. Violent protests highlight India's grim unemployment situation. Hong Kong allows pet stores to resume hamster sales after COVID cull. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more by visiting us at Facebook at VOA Asia. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at voanews.com. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The head of the World Health Organization warned that COVID-19 will be around for the foreseeable future, and everyone will have to learn to live with it. The WHO chief issued the warning at the opening of the agency's week-long executive board meeting, as Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
2 years ago, the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a public health emergency of international concern. Then there were fewer than 100 cases and no deaths reported outside China. Those numbers now stand at nearly 350 million cases and more than 5.5 million deaths. WHO chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says it is hard to know when the pandemic will end. However, while the coronavirus is circulating, he says it will continue to mutate in unpredictable and dangerous ways.
It's dangerous to assume that Omicron will be the last variant or that we are in the end game. On the contrary, globally, the conditions are ideal for more variants to emerge.
Tedros says countries must learn to manage this deadly disease and use the knowledge gained to prepare for future pandemics. To change the course of the pandemic, he says the conditions driving it must change. He says the acute phase of the pandemic can be ended this year if countries use all the strategies and tools available to combat COVID-19. He adds this will work only if all countries, rich and poor alike, have equitable access to vaccines, treatments, and other tools.
Vaccines alone are not the golden ticket out of this pandemic. But there is no path out unless we achieve our shared target of vaccinating 70% of the population of every country by the middle of this year. We have a long way to go.
The WHO chief notes 86 countries have not been able to reach last year's target of vaccinating 40% of their populations. He warned the emergency phase of the pandemic will not end until the gap between the haves and have-not countries is bridged. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
There's much more about COVID. Stay with VOA Asia as Dr. Fauci joins us in a moment. Happening now in Asia, activists urged all participants in the Beijing Olympics to speak out against alleged abuses in China during an online press conference hosted by Human Rights Watch, with less than a week to go before the games open. The Chinese Foreign Ministry has said the Olympics should not be politicized and that HRW is biased against China. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and the chief medical advisor to the president, has been closely monitoring the latest wave of coronavirus in the United States as the Omicron variant continues to spread. He spoke with VOA to give us the latest update on what the United States is doing at home and around the world to combat the virus.
A year ago, we did not have vaccinations implemented in very many people. I mean, just relatively few people. Right now, we have vaccinations and boosters available to people. We are quite clearly, and we have to admit it, being challenged by various surges of different variants. We just recently got through the Delta surge, and now we're faced with an Omicron surge. In the United States, the numbers are really concerning. We're averaging over 2,000 deaths per day. We have about 156,000 people in the hospital, and the cases are averaging between 600,000 and 700,000 a day. That's That's the tough news, the bad news. The somewhat encouraging news is that in many regions of the country, the outbreak has peaked and is turning around. We're seeing that explicitly and specifically in the northeastern part of the country, as exemplified by New York City, and in the upper Midwest in Chicago, also as far south as Washington, D.C. However, there are some states, southern states and western states, which are still surging, and some of them are starting to level off. I think the net effect is that you're going to see a peak and then an ultimate diminution of number of cases, and ultimately, as a late indicator, numbers of hospitalization. But we can't be overconfident that because this looks like it's turning around, one of the things that we've got to continue to try and do is to get people vaccinated, because the data are extraordinarily clear. When you look at the number of hospitalizations and the severity of disease and compare unvaccinated people with vaccinated people, the difference is striking. I mean, very, very profoundly evident, the difference between vaccinated and unvaccinated. So it's a mixed bag. We do well if we're vaccinated and boosted, but we only have about 63% of the population is fully vaccinated, which means that 37% are not. So when the president says we're much better off, he's really referring to the fact that what we have now, we didn't have a year ago. We didn't have the vaccine implementation plan we have. We didn't have antivirals that were effective, and we have at least five now. We didn't have a lot of masks available. We now have hundreds of millions of masks, and we are now implementing about a half a billion rapid tests in the next month or so, followed by yet again another half a billion tests. We're much, much better off than we were a year ago.
To talk about vaccine donations and why, in summary, it's so important in your view as a health professional that we're donating so many vaccines to other countries.
Oh, it's absolutely critical. You address a global outbreak by a global solution and a global effort. And that's why the United States has been committed to and will deliver on vaccine doses to low and middle income countries. So let's look at what's been done thus far. Over 400 million doses of vaccine have been given to over 115 countries. The United States has given or pledged 1.1 billion doses to be delivered between now and the middle of this year as we get into the fall. We've given or pledged $4 billion for COVAX, and we are now working with the companies to expand the capability of the companies such as Moderna and Pfizer and others to be able to ramp up their production to make doses available more quickly to the low and middle income countries. So the United States is leading the world in that by far.
Join VOA Asia tomorrow as Dr. Fauci describes more about the U.S. coronavirus response around the world.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. North Korea state media confirmed its latest missile launches as leader Kim Jong-un toured a factory producing what is described as a major weapons system. North Korea has conducted multiple weapons tests this month. You'll find all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer announced his retirement last week, providing President Joe Biden an opportunity to fill his seat. Biden pledged to keep his campaign promise and nominate an African-American woman to replace Breyer. Chief White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has this report.
In his retirement speech at the White House, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer said American democracy remains an experiment.
It's that next generation and the one after that, my grandchildren and their children. They'll determine whether the experiment still works. And of course, I am an optimist and I'm pretty sure it will.
Breyer's retirement provides an opportunity for President Joe Biden to appoint his replacement, one of the most consequential actions for an American president. The Supreme Court is a key branch of the U.S. government that has the final say on the constitutionality of the actions of the administration, Congress, and the states. Biden said he will announce his nominee by the end of February.
The person I will nominate will be someone with extraordinary qualifications, character, experience, and integrity. And that person will be the first Black woman ever nominated to the United States Supreme Court.
The 9 Supreme Court justices are appointed for life. Breyer is one of only 3 liberal justices appointed by Democratic presidents. The rest were appointed by Republicans, including 3 during the 4 years of Donald Trump's administration. In his 8 years in office, Barack Obama appointed 2 justices, with Republicans blocking his 3rd pick. With only 50 Democratic senators in the 100-seat U.S. Senate, Biden will need all their votes for his nominee to be confirmed. Biden would get at most 1 or 2 Republican votes if he picks a moderate judge, said Adam White, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
But the Democratic coalition does not want a moderate judge. They want somebody who's very strongly committed on certain issues, including criminal justice and other things. Further complicating this is the fact that President Biden pre-committed on the campaign trail to appointing the first Black woman to the Supreme Court. So his pool of potential nominees is limited by that as well.
Biden aims to replace Breyer before midterm congressional elections in November. If Republicans retake control of the Senate, Biden will have a much harder time getting judicial and other nominees confirmed in the final 2 years of his term. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, South Korea is consistently reporting record-high new coronavirus cases topping 16,000 a day as the country battles an outbreak blamed on the highly transmissible Omicron variant. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Spanish tennis great Rafael Nadal has won his 2nd Australian Open and 21st major title by beating Daniil Medvedev 2-6, 6-7, 6-4, 6-4, 7-5. It's Nadal's 90th career title, and he has now broken the tie of major victories he shared with Swiss legend Roger Federer and Serbian Novak Djokovic, who was deported from Australia because of his COVID vaccination status. Craig Gabriel joins us from Melbourne.
History was made on the Rod Laver Arena when Rafa Nadal came back in the most emotional match of his career to win his 21st major. No other man in the history of tennis has done that, and he's broken the tie he shared with Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic for the most majors. In 5 hours, 24 minutes, Nadal came back to beat Daniil Medvedev 2-6, 6-7, 6-4, 6-4, 7-5. Incredibly, in the 6th game of the 3rd set, Medvedev had Nadal at love 40, 3 break points. Nadal got himself out of that situation, and it started his comeback. The question put to him was whether this makes him the greatest men's player at the majors.
No, I don't want to change my my point of view, honestly. No, of course, for me, it's amazing to achieve another Grand Slam at this moment of my career. It just means a lot to me, and of course, I know it's a special number, 21, and I am not... I mean, I know how it means, you know, and it's a big significance, this title, no?
As for Medvedev, he said he is no longer the little boy who dreamed of being in such finals. Now this has been a reality check, and he's going to do more to win these championships. He's going to do it for himself and his family.
Today, during the match, I understood that I'm going to play tennis. The kid stopped dreaming. The kid is going to play for himself, and that's it.
Nadal's victory, which was the 4th time in his career that he's come back from 2 sets to love down, the last time was at Wimbledon in 2007, also brought up an interesting statistic. He now has the longest gap between winning a first title and the second title at the same major. He won his first Australian Open 13 years ago in 2009, and he's displaced Jimmy Connors, who held that position at Wimbledon. His first was in 1974 and the second in 1982. A month ago, Nadal wasn't even sure if he'd be able to play. He was troubled by his foot injury, and he had a bout of COVID. But that is not even in his mind. Now, he's the Australian Open champion for the second time. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Melbourne.
All of us here at VOA Asia wish you a very happy Year of the Tiger, as the Lunar New Year, or Tet, is about to begin. The Vietnamese-American community in Orange County, California, is preparing to give the annual event a loud and earth-rattling welcome. Didi Tran has the story.
In the Little Saigon neighborhoods of Orange County, California, students are practicing their drumming to prepare for Tet, as the Lunar New Year is known in Vietnamese. Khang Bao is a science teacher at Westminster High School and co-founder of the Thiên Ân Performing Arts Drumming Group. For him, drummings represent the essence of being Vietnamese.
The first time I heard was I can feel like my hair pole was standing up. I can feel like there's a soul in the performance. It's not just a dance with hand movement or just not a drum beat, but there's a soul to it. That it's alive.
For the students, drum practice connects them to their friends and community after more than a year of pandemic isolation.
I'm excited. This year for the Death Festival, last year obviously we had to deal with COVID, so we were really restricted on a lot of things we could do. But this year I'm excited to get back out there and perform for our Vietnamese people.
We have been stuck in our houses without practicing, and now that we're finally back, we get to showcase our strength. And I'm also a little nervous since we haven't been performing a lot recently.
These drums are unique, not only in their sound, but also in their importance to the rich stories of Southeast Asia. Some of Vietnam's earliest written history was inscribed on the Đông Sơn bronze drums, first made in Vietnam over 2,000 years ago.
These drums reveal the Vietnamese civilization, the language, the tradition, the instruments. Vietnamese thoughts were all recorded on the bronze drums.
Kiều started collecting the bronze drums before 1975, when he was a doctor in South Vietnam's Airborne Division. He's now a recognized bronze drum scholar.
There is a star in the middle. This star could be the sun or a star. And around there is a circle of lạc birds, always. Đông Sơn drums always have circles of lạc birds flying counterclockwise. We are a people who have a culture of wet rice cultivation, meaning our ancestors paid attention to cultivation so much that they knew the earth was circling the sun. Therefore, everything turns counterclockwise.
Many older Vietnamese Americans treasure the drums for their cultural importance.
The symbolism of the drum is the strongest thing. We need to give children roots and wings. And the roots are the bronze drum of the Vietnam culture, the link and the continuity from generations, from the ancestor to us. And as to the wings, those are hopes. And those are goals for the future, not only to better themselves, but also to benefit others.
And this year, for all who attend Tet celebrations amid another year of pandemic precaution, the sound of drums will symbolize a culture that continues to survive. Didi Chan, VOA News, Orange County, California.
A very happy new year to all of our listeners, and thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue along on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great start to your year. Be safe. Be well.